Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brook. She invites you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts as we complete reading Samuel Hahnemann's Organon. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brock, founder of Homeopathy World Community, and I'm taking time out in our busy day to begin with some inspiration, to talk a bit about current events, and to read the words of Dr. Samuel Hahnemann in his Organon of Medicine. Today is September 20th, 2010, and you're listening to show number 96. Thank you so much for joining me. It looks like HWC Homeopathy Radio is getting popular. Every time somebody goes over to the Blog Talk Radio website and clicks follow or clicks favorite with that little hot red heart, I get a message in my email box and it tells me that someone is following or someone has favorited the show. Thank you so much for your support. Our inspiration today comes from Mark Twain. If you got a broadcast message, it says, "Age is an issue of mind over matter. If you don't mind, it doesn't matter." And you know, we do talk a lot about mind symptoms and our physical symptoms, which is matter. And also from Twitter comes homeopathy_AC is a Twitter handle. He quotes Zig Ziglar, "If you don't see yourself as a winner, then you cannot perform as a winner." So here we see it is mind over matter. It is a matter of putting your mind in the place where you want to be, meditating on it, and thinking in your mind, creating that image of success, of your performance. Also, we've been doing a little bit about retraining your brain, and I encourage people to go over on Facebook and click on I Love Homeopathy. I just love what they have to provide as a daily gift of treasures of pictorial quizzes to improve your homeopathic study. So get over to I Love Homeopathy on Facebook. Now we're going to do another little quiz that we did one, our first one yesterday. We're going to do another one today. And test yourself. It's called the greatest area. You've probably heard many jokes about engineers. I don't know that I've heard any about physicists or mathematicians. I'm sure in their social circles they do have some. So here's the puzzle. A farmer challenges an engineer, a physicist, and a mathematician to fence off the largest amount of area using the least amount of fence. The engineer made his fence in a circle and said it was the most efficient. The physicist made a long line and said that the length was infinite. Then he said that he'd fence off half of the earth. That was the best. The mathematician laughed at the others, and with his design, he beat them. Okay, that puzzler is for you, and at the end of the show, I'll tell you what the answer is. By the way, I thought this was the easiest of all the puzzles that I've heard so far. Maybe other people would feel the same way. Also, I came across an article yesterday about the magnificent obsession, and there's a lot of talk today about OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. And since we're retraining our brains and doing mind over matter, I thought it was fascinating that this particular PhD couple were working together on obsessive compulsive and the way that you can get a positive twist on it. I'm going to quote what they say. "Healthy preoccupations," say Eric Mazel, PhD, and Anne Mazel, aren't just for people driven to accomplish something out of the ordinary. They are for everyone. In their Psychology Today article called Go Ahead Obsess, oh, that gives me permission to be obsessive, which you know I am, written in Carlin Flora, they say, quote, in order to lead a life that makes you proud, you likely need to up the ante and get obsessed. Okay, everyone, all you homeopaths who your passion in your life is homeopathy only, it's okay. You have permission. According to the Maisels, co-author of the new book Brainstorm, Harnessing the Power of Productive Obsessions, productive obsessing can help you learn how to extinguish distractions so that you can concentrate. You retrain your brain, asking it to halt its pursuit of fluff and worry to instead embrace its own potential. In addition, you announce that you prefer grand pursuits to ordinary ones. You stand in solidarity with other members of your species who have opted for big thinking and big doing. Let's go, everyone. All you homeopaths, let's bind together and do it together. They say it can also provoke all sorts of mental states, euphoria when something goes brilliantly, irritation when you feel thwarted, fatigue after hours of mental struggle, excitement as one idea leads to another. You can prepare for these states and decide beforehand how you will handle them. Do you already know what your productive obsession would be? Everybody out there, you're saying it to yourself in your mind. Commit to it. If you're not sure what obsession to cultivate, this couple suggests thinking about something that's rooted in love, interest, and a desire to better our shared circumstances here in the world. Think big, they say. I remember the movie Big. Begin with 1 month of productive obsessing, then another, and ultimately a lifetime. And be prepared to counter old habits of fear, fantasy, worry, regret, or idleness with a constant recommitment, which sounds like, I am doing this, damn it. Oh, boy. A little bit of cursing in there. So go ahead and obsess. That is giving you permission. And it sounds like they're also saying there are things that hold us back from thinking big and really attaining our goals and success in what we want to do. Okay, now we're going to talk a little bit about HWC News. There is an article posted by Gabrielle Traub, and it's probing the issue of homeopaths who claim that they are giving homeopathic remedies as an alternative to vaccinations. And there's a lot of talking on there about what to do about that situation and whether it's okay and whether even Hahnemann wrote anything about using it as a prophylaxis. So I'm not giving you any of the answers or whatever they're saying. Go ahead and read it. The other article posted on HWC News is one by Dr. Sarang, and I'm sure you're going to love this one too. He says, you have to join the Translating Language into Repertory Rubrics group. So that's you have to click that, join the group to get there. And then you're going to see the discussions listed. And this is the discussion called Understanding Hyoscyamus Through Rubrics. And he puts down there differentiations between a few other remedies as well as a lot of symptoms for this particular remedy. Another great article on HWC was posted by Dr. Prabhat Kumar Kasgupta. And he asks 3 questions. The title of this article, it's a fascinating pharmacy topic, sugar of milk. He asks, why do we only use sugar of milk made in the United States or Holland? What is sugar of milk and how is it prepared? Why can we not use sugar of milk made in other countries? And a lot of people have a few things to say about that particular question, those 3 questions. And there is also a link to www.lactose.com/production/HTML, where you will learn everything you ever wanted to know about Saklak. And since we're talking about lack, there is another article that I might have mentioned in the past by Dr. Poonam Batra about lack the floratum for vertigo. And so this is very a strong keynote symptom for the particular case that she was teaching us and presenting for the symptom of when the patient cannot lie down in bed and sleep. The patient has to sit up to avoid vertigo, and the whole night long the person is sitting up. This is the perfect symptom or keynote to select lack the floratum, which is derived from skim milk. Okay, and it seems appropriate to read through a discussion presented by Dr. Dishlok Sharma about the Kent's 12 observations. And if we have time, I might go back and do that. Dr. Sharma says, external symptoms are the only guide in the treatment of disease. All the pathological reports and laboratory findings taken together cannot give us the true picture of the causation, nature, and extent of progress of disease. Besides, the opinions on the reports may vary. Interpretation of these findings may be different, but symptoms have not changed. They speak a language of their own. They are the real and true indicators of disease. When a carefully selected remedy acts on a diseased person and produces some change in the existing symptoms in the diseased state, it relieves or it aggravates or it brings new features in the disease picture. If careful observation is made of the effect produced by a remedy, the whole past, present, and future of the patient can be predicted. It can bring before us the real inside and outside picture of the disease. This has been very exhaustively studied, but simply stated by Kent. And so at some time, if we do have time, I'd like to read through the 12 observations that he has posted, or you can go there yourself and read it. Now we're going to move on to the study of the organon today. Instead of doing any general current events in the news, see, I'm going to wind up to it. In aphorism number 71, we were talking about the 3 points necessary for cure. 1, knowing what needs to be cured. 2, knowing the pathogenic powers of the medicine. And 3, how to use the medicine to cure the natural disease. Aphorism number 72 was a general overview of acute and chronic disease. Aphorism number 73 was continuing on with the acute diseases and talking about the 3 types or examples, individual, sporadic, and epidemic. Aphorism number 74 talked about the chronic diseases that were incurred from taking allopathic drugging. This is an artificial chronic disease. Aphorism number 75 spoke about the artificial chronic disease, the ones that were being produced through these allopathic drugs, as being most incurable. And aphorism number 76 said that the relief can be expected in artificial chronic diseases only if the vital force is powerful and not weakened or diminished. Okay, we have a caller in. Marilyn seems to be really into studying with me. Oops. Oh, I must have. Something happened. What happened? Hello? I don't know what happened. Oh. Oh.
I apologize for that.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brooke. She invites you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts as we
Oh, boy. The introduction, I guess we get a big intro that continues in with us. And I apologize for the interruption. I don't know. I guess I must have accidentally clicked the intro. And that leads us to wherever we're supposed to be, and that is aphorism number 77. Okay. I'm going to read. Those diseases are inappropriately named chronic, which persons incur who expose themselves continually to avoidable noxious influences, who are in the habit of indulging in injurious liquors or aliments, who are addicted to dissipation of many kinds, which undermine the health, who undergo prolonged abstinence from things that are necessary for the support of life, who reside in unhealthy localities, especially marshy districts, who are housed in cellars or other confined dwellings, who are deprived of exercise or of open air, who ruin their health by overexertion of body or mind, who live in a constant state of worry. These states of ill health, which persons bring upon themselves, disappear spontaneously, provided no chronic miasm lurks in the body, under an improved mode of living, and they cannot be called chronic diseases. So here, Kahneman in aphorism number 77 is talking about diseases caused by avoidable noxious influences and that are not really truly, you can't really call them chronic. And I apologize for that interruption. I'm wondering how I can integrate that into today's talk. Maybe it's an avoidable influence that maybe if I don't accidentally click a button, it would not start interrupting the show. Okay, so here he's saying that we are wrongly labeling a chronic disease as a chronic disease if it's something that you can do something about it. So if you can change your status, your living circumstances, it's not really a chronic disease at all. It's something that's going to go away, and it won't even come back if you're doing any of these things that he's listed. Hello, Marilyn.
Hi, Debbie.
I apologize for that. It was kind of like, where did that come from? I had no idea, and I was searching all around the internet to find out how that started to play, and it was just my finger on the keyboard, I guess, clicked it by accident. How are you doing today, Marilyn?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm great.
Hi to everybody listening. Hi to everybody who's listening.
Definitely. And for all those future listeners, all those people who are going to download it and listen to the archive sometime in the future, I hope you enjoy the show. And we're talking right now about how we can improve our health and not mislabel or misidentify what we're considering to be a chronic lingering illness or ailment when it's something that we can avoid simply by changing our lifestyle. If you can, for instance, if you can move, if you're in an environment which is continuing this problem of illness, then it's something that you can do about it and it will save your health. Now, here's a question for anybody out there or for Marilyn. I'm going to pose this out there. What if you are living in the Gulf of Mexico and you're exposed to the hydrocarbons and the other gases that are causing respiratory and skin outbreaks? What if you are then breathing the tainted air, drinking the toxic water, and eating polluted fish and agricultural products, what do we do for thousands of people who are in this situation? Because I really have no answer. This is an open-ended question because it's affecting a multitude of people. It is not simply, you know, this is an individual case. Anybody have an answer? Go ahead.
I don't have an answer. I was just going to say that is such an interesting question.
Uh-huh.
You can't tell them to move. It's not like somebody living in a damp cellar and you say, well, just move, right?
Uh-huh.
It's impossible. So what do you do in that case?
Okay, we're going to pose that out to all the people. And here's another idea that came up. What if you are one of the millions of people in the flooded area of Pakistan or the tent cities that resulted as the aftermath of the Haiti earthquake, or a child living within a dysfunctional or argumentative family relationship? What these little children, you know, they're stuck in that situation, and many of them will be the children who perhaps run away from home. So in that case, at a tender age, they may find a way to escape and avoid the family situation, but they haven't resolved the problem. So I've just posted a lot of questions for people, and I'm wondering perhaps if the one that would be considered epidemic as opposed to individual case, that in other words, it's not avoidable. So perhaps the cases that I've presented don't fall under aphorism number 77. What do you think about that?
They kind of do, don't they? If you have somebody living in, if you have somebody who's, you know, in an unfortunate situation, you know, it's maintaining cause.
Uh-huh.
So, right? So it would be considered an obstacle to cure.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
If you have a child in an unhealthy home, how do you treat that child? You can't. You have to treat the whole home. You have to treat everybody in it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're unfortunate enough to live by the Gulf where there's all this spillage and everything else that's going on, it's easy for us to say move, but you know, how do they do that? How are they going to sell their homes? How are they going to move? How are they going to go?
Right.
So you're there's a maintaining cause, and there's an obstacle to cure.
Right.
Quite interesting, isn't it?
It's fascinating. And I even have a further question that I think is very an ethical, moral question. Let's say that you live in a home and it does have a damp cellar, or you live in a home where you have radon exposure from the seepage from under the earth, or you have a home that has some other type of problem, and you say, okay, I have to move, you know, and so you're going to sell your house. Now, what happens to the person who buys the house and is going into the situation that you're going out of, that you're avoiding? In other words, how ethical? In other words, to me, in my own personal mind, it raises ethical questions about
disclosure.
Trading. Yeah, disclosure and trading my wealth, my health, for somebody else's health, in a way. You see what I'm saying? So unless another person has a means to repair the situation, which I perhaps did not have a means to repair that situation, or perhaps if I was more sensitive to it and the next person is not. But to me, that's all rationalizations. And I don't know, these are unanswered questions today, a lot of unanswered questions. In aphorism number 77, also, Hahnemann speaks to avoidable noxious influences. Thus, I feel like this is something within your control. He says, quote, which people bring upon themselves, unquote. Thus, they are responsible for the outcome, for their own illness. He says that with better care of the mode of living, which we might call lifestyle, all would be well, except if there was a miasmatic underpinning to the chronic condition. So here he is talking again about miasms, which is what he's been talking about since the last three aphorisms. And so he's bringing in the fact of he worked for like a dozen years to try and figure out what was going on with the patients that he had, that he knew he was giving a proper similimum, proper matching energetic remedy, and he was not getting permanent success. It would be temporary or it would not continue on with successful treatment. And that's when he realized that there was something else going on to continue on that chronic condition.
You know, in my experience, one of the things that I've always thought about is when you have a, you know, miasm and you have, you know, for instance, you've got the cancer miasm that runs through a family, and somebody, you know, has a propensity through genetics to have something like colon cancer, right? Let's say everybody, you know, in the family that has died has had colon cancer. And when you look at what that person likes to eat and what that person wants, it's usually all the wrong food, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of them saying, okay, I need, because of the history, I need to eat vegetables, I need to eat fruits, I need to be, you know, lean, I need not to, you know, no red meat, no heavy on the carbohydrates. I need to be really lean. And they don't, most of them are not like that. Most of them have the craving for all of the food that is not good for them. So is it because they have that miasm, so therefore they have craving?
Or is so you're saying, is it the chicken or the egg? Is it that they're not taking care of themselves because there's that underlying miasm there, or is it because they're not taking care of themselves that it's exhibiting the symptoms of the miasm?
Right.
Well, I also know that there are plenty of individuals who have a heredity of cancer in their family who are ultra, ultra good on their lifestyle. You know, they're ultra health conscious, ultra exercise, very careful about the sun, all these different things. So I wouldn't say that it was the lifestyle. And he's also saying in this aphorism number 77 that, that there are people who are taking care of their health in every way and still they have sickness. And I think that's what he's saying, that if it's avoidable, if there's an avoidable noxious influence, oh, gosh, we're out of time here. So maybe I'll start up with this next time. And I appreciate everyone, Marilyn, especially you, for calling in. And I pose this one more question at the end. I was wondering if you feel that Hahnemann covered all the bases of what could be covered under the category of avoidable instances, or if this is necessary. Is it enough just to give you a few examples? So this is kind of an interesting aphorism and a lot to talk about, and take your Organon off the shelf and read it. Until the next time, I'm saying goodbye, Marilyn, and goodbye all of you listeners out there. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Debbie. Thanks for Food for Thought.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopath Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.